privileged, honored, and humbled to have on the Mike Saffel podcast today, my man, Rohan Marley. What's going on, bro?
What's up, buddy? You good?
Appreciate you coming down to the bar to hang out, man.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Listen, here's the deal. We have a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. Mutual friend hits me up. He's like, listen, Mike, I'm going to be with Rohan Marley later on. You should have him on your show. I'm like, dude, of course. Rohan Marley, son of legendary Bob Marley. And I'm like, this is the linebacker from the U.
Yeah,
of course I want him on.
So my buddy, Al, he's always looking out. You know, he told me about, we were having a few, couple of drinks at my house. We had some dinner and stuff. And, you know, so some guys hanging out. And we just started talking about your pod. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Let's go. Let's rock and roll.
But Rowan, here's the best part.
Reggae and roll, actually.
Yeah, so, but here's the best part. So I'm like, yeah, I'll talk about the U, talk about your dad. Yeah. I Google you and I see farmer. I'm like, is this a fucking joke? What do you mean, farmer? So how does Rohan Marley get in the coffee business?
Well, shit, when I was at Miami, you know, I left in 95. I did a little stint in the CFL because I was kind of ineligible for the NFL. And, I mean, as you know, my son now is playing for the Redskins, and he's, like, you know, just surpassed everything I dreamed of doing, which is good because that's what sons are to do. So between 95 and 99, I was searching to find out what I wanted to do as a man. How can I contribute to society? How can I then implement all these things I've learned over my lifetime as my father talked about helping people, giving back? How do I then make that into a reality? How do I manifest that? So having kids with Lauren, Lauren's very, very famous woman, and I was like just a little peon. And she's like, what do you do? So with that question is the question that propelled me into becoming a farmer, even just becoming an entrepreneur. I went to Jamaica. I had about $200,000 that I had from a family deal. Went to Jamaica. There was a piece of land that was available in Jamaica. I bought the land. But when I bought the land, I had no idea what I wanted to do with the property.
You just bought land?
I just bought it because I heard that it had a river on the land. When I went to see it, it was so beautiful. I thought it was like, it's impossible that someone would sell this. I have to take it because I want this piece of land in my family. I bought the property. So I'm like, wow, what did I just do? Did I give away all my money? So while I'm walking off the land, right, the entire community, they're standing there. And to my knowledge, what was going on was the previous owner of the land, he promised all these people work. But 2 years, 3 years, 4 years go by and there's nothing being done. So they're pissed off. They're like, what is he doing here? What the fuck? Who's this guy he's with? So the first thing he did was like, hey, I want to introduce you to somebody. This is Rohan Marley, one of Bob Marley's sons. So now I got to open my mouth. I'm like, what the fuck? What do I say now? But, you know, being Bob's son, I had to kind of posture up, you know, like, you know, put on my little lion man.
Yeah, your body armor, because your name is heavy there. Your mystique, yeah, sure.
Yes. And when he said Bob Marley's son, I saw a little twinkle in their eyes, like hope, you know? So I said, what am I going to do now to give these people hope and give them to believe in a future and believe that I can do something that can propel their life and create a progression in this community? The first thing came to my mind, I said, let me ask you something. What is the community known for? And they told me coffee. I said, coffee like oil? They said, yes, Mr. Marley, coffee. I said, what's on my property? They told me coffee, Blue Mountain coffee. I then said to them, do you know anything about coffee? I said, yes, Mr. Marley, we've been farming coffee all our lives. So then I stuck my hand down. I said, all right, we're in the coffee business.
Is that true?
So that's 1999. And I went back and I started to learn how to grow organic coffee. Because the one thing I did say, that if I'm going to get into this farming thing, this farm has to be like me. It has to be the way I eat because I have to eat from the land. And when I told that to the community, you know what they said to me? Oh, Mr. Marley, it won't work. You're going to be wasting your money. I said, listen to me. If you use any chemicals on this property, I myself, I'll come and I'll cut every tree down because you're not going to be working for me or working with me and develop all these ailments. You know the chemicals, the cancer, some of the things that you came with, I don't even know. But I just knew that at that time, as a young boy, understand that it's just not good and we don't eat that way. So I told them they got to do it my way and they agreed. So since 1999 till 2010, I sourced, I studied, I researched, I moved to Ethiopia in 2007. I started to learn about coffee as a universal.
So you went all in. You didn't just get the land. You went all in.
I went all the way in. And then I lived in Ethiopia and discovered, because I ended up like going back to Jamaica, because I was living in New Jersey, and I started moved back to Jamaica to start to develop this farming thing. But what happened was I could not reap enough on my 52 acres in order to get an export license, nor did the government at the coffee industry board at the time knew anything about organic coffee.
Okay.
Because I was the first guy. You
know? It's a new thing here.
It's a new thing there. So I said, shyster. 2004 comes around. I reap all my product. I sell it. I give it to this guy to process for me. Long story short, they stole my coffee. I kind of gave up.
Oh, wow.
Moved to Los Angeles in 2004, end of 2004. While I'm there, I launched Tough Punk Clothing with my brothers again, the family. Failed at that because ran out of money. Our partner was taking too much of a high salary, and I couldn't get a budget from the family anymore because they're like, listen, if your partner don't take a salary cut, we got to shut the business down. Well, he couldn't at the time because of whatever circumstances. So 2007, I decided that I need to go and cleanse myself, and I decided that I wanted to be connected to Africa, Ethiopia. And in that year of 2007, on the Ethiopian calendar in September, it would have been the year 2000. And, you know, due to my studies and my research in life, I overstood from a long time ago that the Christ and the good spirit will return to the earth in those regions. And being that I was connected to the oldest calendar, I wanted to be there for that. While I'm there, I discovered coffee in Ethiopia, and I discovered also that Starbucks, they were buying coffee from Ethiopia. And I was saying to myself, being that the biggest coffee company in the world, they also source coffee, why don't I do the same thing? I let my farm become an inspiration to me, and I started to source coffee like Starbucks. I also, while I was there, a gentleman said to me, let me ask you something. What are you doing here? I said, well, you know, I came home. He says, no, man, you're Bob's son. Do you sing? I said, I don't sing, but I have a coffee farm. And then he says to me, do you know that Ethiopia is the birthplace of coffee? And when the Yemenites would cross the Red Sea into Ethiopia and bring the coffee back to Yemen, the Europeans would buy the beans from the Yemenites, and then they would say they have the beans from the Arabs. But the truthful name is Arabic. Ethiopica. The Arabica is what they call it today, but the birthplace of coffee is Ethiopica. So I said, boom. That was my second signal. I went to a monastery that I visited, because what I did do in the year 2000 of the European calendar, I did go to Ethiopia. 7 years prior, I went to the same monastery and I saw coffee trees on the monastery. And the hermit that I was traveling with, he's like, I said, I thought the church, what is this? What, coffee on the land? He took a cherry to me, long story short, threw the cherry to me and told me it was going to be my future business. 7 years later, he sends me back to the same monastery. While I'm on the monastery this time, I go up to the top of the monastery and I see the coffee being processed on the monastery. So I say to the monk, I took pictures of everything, of course. I say to the monk that's there on the monastery, I'm like, I thought the church didn't deal in coffee. He says, well, the roof is leaking. The poor people need food. The priests, they need this, they need that. We have coffee. We trade coffee. So those three reasons is the reason I got into the coffee business.
I've never in my life.
That's such a long story.
No. I'm going to tell you something. I jotted down some notes on you. I'm like, oh, maybe he'll mention the coffee. Dude, you have fucking real passion for coffee. You really do, don't you? Wait, didn't you just have a coffee cookbook? It's on your Twitter today. You're all in with the coffee.
Yeah, I love it. You know, it's like, it's part of my life, man. And it was like the way I could express myself through a sustainable movement, you know. And then from coffee, it stemmed to the House of Marley, Marley Natural, and Marley Beverages. So we as a family, we just like, it's important that one of us, like, just didn't just say, okay, I'm going to be a musician like my dad. You know, I took that lead because I feel that a football player, I wanted to play for the NFL, you know, which my son is doing today. And I failed at that, and I failed at getting into the fashion industry. I failed at that. So the only thing I really could return to is what my father started out as, which was a farmer. And I said, you know what? I want to be connected to the people and the farmers and the community. And that's how I learned about what sustainability is, because I realized that the land that I attained in 1999, that I couldn't take that land anywhere. You know what I mean? The land was just for me to be a steward of the land and try to develop something that can give more to the community, because when you have so much, much is expected of you. And what am I doing? You know, instead of spending money buying new shoes, I'd rather spend money giving it to the people as a salary, because I had to, because I had no budget or no business plan.
That's so deep, man. It really is.
I just switched up where I put my money, you know?
All right. So now before we get into the football, I want to talk about the U and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You live in New York.
Yeah.
What's your favorite New York City hangout?
My place.
Where do you live? What neighborhood?
I live in Tribeca, but I love to go to One Oak. I love to go to Up and Down. I love those guys. And I used to go a lot to Provocateur when that was around. But also, right in Tribeca, there's a few spots I love. Macau, and then there's the garage. What's that place called again? Organic Garage, where I eat all that food.
Yeah, on Church Street. Isn't
Antique
Church?
Garage. Yes, yeah, yes, I love yes. that place. I love Macau. And I love it, you know, and I have a lot of... I love the neighborhood. I'm friends with some of my neighbors. We stay on the step during the daytime and talk to people. I just love New York because I feel to where I am as a human being, as an entrepreneur in the development stage of life, the business development stage, I want to be in the pulse of business. I want to be in the mecca of business because that's where I'm learning and that's what I can contribute to society is right. Turning my knowledge into something profitable for people. And also being able to give back, you know?
Rohan Marley. First of all, I'm stoked you're here. No, this is cool shit, man. This is cool shit you hear. How does a dude, Jamaica, mm-hmm. where soccer, real football, mm-hmm. is king, mm-hmm. how do you move? Because, you know, I looked you up and stuff. You moved to Florida.
Yeah.
How do you go to playing soccer in Jamaica to come up here playing American football and then go into the U with a scholarship? How does that happen?
Easy.
No, don't say easy because I tried to do it. I mean...
when I say easy, I mean like... So when I was raising in Jamaica, right, I left Jamaica. My father passed when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. I left Jamaica when I was 11 and a half, 12 years old. But up until that point, I grew up like a rebel, you know. I used to hunt food. I used to shoot birds with my slingshot. I used to walk around the community and pick up bottles so I can have money to buy food, you know, because my mother didn't have any money. My dad gave her some money, but of course she's young, so she's going to use that not only for me, but for her, and she needs it more than I do, you know. All I need at the time is food and clothing, so she provided that from breakfast and dinner, but anything in between that, I need to fend for myself, you know. So I'd go into the cane fields, I'd break cane, I learned to swim in a canal. So I kind of grew up fighting for my life, but fighting for survival, you know, fighting the kids in my community because, you know, they thought I was a little bit special because my dad is Bob Marley, but they realize I live in the same place they live, so I'm not special. Mm-hmm. Like, why is he Bob's son and living here with us? He should be living somewhere else, but, you know, they realized that I was a good guy and what I have, I shared. What my father gave me, I would come back to the community and share it with them because I was the only guy with a soccer ball, a football, you know? So one day... You know, they expelled me from school in Jamaica because I used to live in this place called Spanish Town, which is a lot of hours away, and I had to get up at early in the morning. So then I was like the outcast because...
Oh, you're not about that life. You're not going to start traveling for school.
Traveling for
at
school.
At 11, that's... Come on.
Earlier than 11. I'm doing this from 6 years old, taking a bus because we didn't have cars. So, but at the time, I you know, you have to have a uniform to go to the school. And, you know, I play a lot, and I didn't have too many PE clothes. Like, you know, I didn't have too much gym stuff. So, you know, I grow rough. So if my pocket tore, I had to stitch my pocket up because I can't go to school with a torn pocket because my it's a bush jacket, two pockets up top, like, you know, like a, and two pockets down.
You're in uniform, yeah.
Uniform.
Yeah.
So I had to stitch it up. And then when I'd go to school, I'd be the only outcast with a brown and white thread. So I felt a little bit out, you know. And so I just didn't like, after my father passed away, I kind of got a little rebellious. So they expelled me from school. And I went to Miami. I in the sixth grade, I had to redo the sixth grade. And while I was in Miami, the Miami Dolphins, when I got to Pinecrest Elementary in 1984 into the 84-85 season, it was Miami Dolphins year when they played San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, it was Marino, Clayton, Duper, right?
Marino, Clayton, Duper, yeah. Nat Moore, the Blackwood Brothers, you name it, you know, a lot.
Were hooked when you saw the Dolphins? Hooked.
I was hooked because I learned to play the game by kickball in school. I didn't know what kickball was. You throw the ball. They roll the ball to you. Kick it. I played soccer, so I used to kick it for a long distance. But then you had to throw the ball when you're in the field. But I used to throw a lot of stones because in Jamaica, I was like little David. I used to stones were my only weapon of choice. That's how we fight for survival down there. You got to stone these guys out of the community because they'll take over. So I learned then. And then one day in PE, they picked up this Ovlon ball. I'm like, what is this?
What's this brown egg-shaped ball?
Like, what do you do with this? Like, they start throwing it around. I'm like, wow. And then you go home, and then it's the month. And then I have neighbors, so the kids would invite me to their houses because we play a lot of flag football. And then the thing was, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, number one. And that was always on the radio, and I became a Dolphin fan. So whenever the Dolphins would lose to any team, I'd go on my little Atari. And I think it was Tecmo Bowl in one of those games.
Of course, yes.
And I beat the team they lost to. And then
you gave him revenge. You're good.
Yeah, I got revenge on my game. So I learned to play the game by watching television. And I picked it up, and then in an eighth grade, I went out for the Optimus League at 135. My hero, I mean, I couldn't play quarterback because that was what I was practicing for, but the other position they put me was split end because, you know, and my hero was Mark Clayton. I took number 83, Mark Clayton, Mark Duper, but 83 was available. So I started out as a receiver, and then in ninth grade, I was in eligible because I was weighing 145, and the weight class was 135. So I was like, 138, 140, but I wasn't in the mood to lose weight.
Man, you fight every rule. Lose 5 pounds now. Go to school. No, I'm not traveling to school. Fuck that bullshit.
So then I sat out. I played flag football my ninth grade year. And then 10th grade now. 10th grade. I played also baseball because the guy thought I threw the ball well, so I tried out for the varsity JV team. Varsity JV, don't make any sense. I tried out and I played on the JV baseball, and I played soccer, and I also wrestled in junior high, didn't wrestle in senior high because of soccer. Mm-hmm. I ran track, I did the high jump, I ran the 4x400 relay. I was too slow for the 100, but I had a quick 40. And I became a football player. They moved me to a cornerback because I just didn't like, you know. They wanted me to play fullback. I wasn't into that. Mm-hmm. Moved me at a tight cornerback. I picked every pass off of there. Spring ball, my 11th grade, going into my 11th grade year, spring ball, they moved me to strong safety. First day of practice, we had on helmets, no shoulder pads. Back came out the backfield. I dropped into the flat and knocked his head off.
Like Ronnie Lott, you were just throwing your head at
people. I didn't know I couldn't hit him without it. We had on helmets, so why not? So I hit him, and they're like, Marley, what are you doing? And then the linebacker guy got hurt, and they're like, okay, we're moving Marley, the linebacker. So because I knew nothing about football, my favorite number was number 10 because of Pele. In the 10th grade, so my number was 10, that's JV. When they move me to linebacker, now I'm like, all right, now it's time to get serious. What number do I choose? I choose number 44 because of Brian Bosworth.
The Boz, really?
Yes, I tied my head like Bosworth. I played in spring.
Did you wear the bandana and stuff, did you?
Yeah. I tied my head like Bosworth. And then, spring ball, I showed out. I played well. And then my junior year, I moved to linebacker, led the team in tackles. My senior year, I took us to number 14 state. I took us to a district championship. Broke my ankle. We lost that game because I broke my ankle in the first series. And after that, after football was over, I played the entire soccer season on a broken ankle. So I never made it heal because I didn't want. I'm the type of guy when I was in junior high school for track, I got in a fight like Monday or something. I got in a fight on Friday. Right, this guy from the senior high came down to my high school picking on the young guys. So I said, okay, hold on a second, let me go see him.
You know, grab some stones and go fuck him up.
No, I didn't. I didn't use stones this time. This time I was into Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard. So I said, let me go find what's going on. Anyway, I beat up the guy because he was beating up our kids from senior. I was in the ninth grade. I beat him up, but I broke my hand, my thumb, punching him in the head all the time. So it's Monday. I have a cast on my hand. We have a track and field meet on Tuesday that I didn't know about. So my sixth grade period of because I had to be at the track and field for 10 o'clock in the morning. So my sixth grade period on Monday, I took the saw because they said I couldn't participate if I had a cast on. So I took the saw on Monday evening. I cut the cast off. So Tuesday, I taped it up and I did my track and field. So that's why my thumb is like this today. I never healed it. So my entire college career, I had a broken thumb that always bothered me.
Did you get a full ride to the U?
Yes, sir. The last ride, actually.
You can take a drink. I'll make this question long. University of Miami, the U, you guys have 2 30-for-30s for you. It's Catholics, convicts. You guys have a reputation of a million different things.
Yes.
Yet it's probably one of the most. I'm a Kentucky basketball guy. No. So
sure. You're an athlete. You know the role.
You appreciate historical franchises that the U dominates.
Sure.
And when the U's good, college football is good. Alabama's always good.
Yeah.
Dude, you play with some legendary cats down there.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm gonna tell you something. This is the truth. I'm gonna show you my phone later. Three dudes I work with and two other guys. I'm like, hey, if you want to swing by for the podcast, I tell them I'm having you on. They're like, dude, number two, my favorite linebacker. Dude, you play with Ray Lewis, Warren Sapp.
Jesse Armstead, Michael.
I'm a Giants guy, so you play with Jesse Armstead.
Jesse's
okay.
My roommate. I'm number two. Yeah, Jesse's my big bro. When it comes down to football, Jesse Armstead is my big brother. Like, he's really...
I didn't know you played with Armstead.
Yeah. He's my first year I played with Jesse. I backed him.
He was a monster to you.
Jesse's the greatest linebacker that ever come out of high school. From Carter University.
It's like linebacker
Carter
you.
High school. Yeah, Carter High School.
It's you, he's Ray Lewis. It's these guys are legendary people.
Warren Sapp,
legendary players, not just in college, in the NFL. It's just
Gino Toretta, Heisman winner, Kevin Dove. The freaking these guys are Heisman Trophy guys. Lamar Thomas, Horace Copeland, Spence, and I mean Copeland. All these guys. Leon Searcy
and Darren Cryan. You played for Dennis Erickson?
Yeah, I played for D. Yeah,
you love them,
Coach E. That's a player's coach.
You know what I love too about the U. You guys preach family, and it's funny because Kentucky does that too, and the U guys get shit for it. Like when Jeremy Shockey would go down there and practice, all the U guys would do it.
All of us.
Yeah, it's like a family.
Like today, my best friend, Edrin James, you know, we didn't play together, but there's...
Number 32 for the Colts, baby.
At no time would Edrin ever come to New York and not see me, or we don't see each other. We didn't play together. Clinton Portis, another one of my really, really close friends. Best friends as well. Matter of fact, all the college guys that goes to University of Miami, they're considered my brothers, blood, everything. There's no UM player that can't show up in New York and not have a home to stay.
It's weird because not many schools are like that. Like, and I'll tell you, I'll bring it back to Kentucky. At the NBA All-Star game, John Wall's there with Anthony Davis. They never played together, but Calipari makes sure, hey, we're going to be a family. We're going to preach it. And you know what? That's good for recruiting. You have a guy like you. Like, I'm friends with these guys who I never played with.
Never played with.
And yet you're still legitimate friends with
Brian
them.
Brian McKinney. Never played with Brian. I mean, John Beasley. You have the
legends in the NFL is
yeah,
you.
I can't remember.
Do you throw up the U sign all the time or no?
Yeah, I do. And you know we have that emoji. That's a U sign.
Yeah, I know. Before the show, you were saying, I wanted to play in the NFL, but I was ineligible.
Yeah.
Because you played in the CFL. What do you mean by ineligible?
So, all right. My junior year, you know, I hurt my MCL. I took a few days off, a few weeks off. I went to Jamaica. I didn't do the normal rehab stuff. I went to Jamaica.
That's
ran
the worst
the
rehab I've ever heard in my life.
Came back for the bowl game, played in the bowl game, and then my son Nico, he was born on January 5th. So after the bowl game, I flew to Haiti. But I won. Warren left, James Stewart left, another one of my really good friends. He was running back for us. He played for Minnesota as well. So my class, a couple of my best friends, they left. So I'm like, I'm not coming back to school. And first of all, the school was dicking me around a little bit my junior year. Like, they wanted to play a kid that they brought in who's an All-American. But, I mean, I'm on the field, so he has to beat me out, which he couldn't. So they dicked me around. They benched me home games, started him home in a way. Then they were just playing games. I'm like, I'm not into this emotional bullshit, roller coaster shit. So when Sapp left and James left, I was like, shit, I'm not going back to school. I don't want to fucking play for Coach Butch Davis. I don't know his sister. I don't know if they're going to come and fuck me around. Like the
and you loved it. You said you were a DE guy. So you didn't want to go from Coach Erickson.
Yeah. Tuberville, because what happened, my sophomore year, I had Coach Tubb. Then Coach Tubb left and had a different D coordinator, which is a great, great guy. Greg McMackin, who's my really, really, really good person. But they just didn't understand my style of play. They kind of changed me around a little bit. And then then I got to sit through this bullshit and then deal with this other shit again. I'm like, nah.
And that's frustrating. You tell me you're hurt, you're playing your ass off, and all of a sudden
some new guy. I'm playing my fucking ass off, and then here's this fucking new guy comes. So now my son is born in Haiti on this January 5th. I can't call to tell these guys I'm not coming back to school. I get back around the 7th. I go to the media department. Hey, I want to declare for the draft. Okay, let's see. Rohan, do you know you had to declare yesterday? I'm like, shit, I was in Haiti.
Wow.
And they called the NFL. The NFL said no exceptions to the rules. So I said, fuck it, I retire. And I walked out of her office and never went back to school.
Seriously?
Seriously.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to try to bring it back. So I don't know if you know Olden Polynice. He played in the NBA. Mm-hmm, he played for the Kings. Mm-hmm, he's been on my show a couple times. Mm-hmm. It's funny. He's Haitian. And I'm like, dude, why'd you enter the draft? You know he was supposed to go in the year before, but he missed the fucking draft deadline.
Same shit.
Yeah, his agent. It's his fucking... You can't be going to Haiti. That's what
happens.
Missed
the fucking draft. I missed it. Same fucking thing. And because I was a jackass, too, I'm stupid. I didn't give a fuck. I know nothing. I didn't know I can go into a supplementary draft. I didn't know I can fucking be a free. I didn't know
and
shit.
And they weren't offering you hey, bro, listen, you missed it, but don't worry.
No one's talking to me. Oh. Nobody's talking to me. So that's why I say fuck them all, because no one helped me at that time. I didn't give a fuck anyway. I was done. See, I'm getting pissed off because I'm so passionate. When you talk football, I mean, I cried because of, not then, crying inside because after I went to the CFL and I left the CFL, because my idea was to come on, play 1 year in the CFL, then come over back to the NFL, try out. But I quit before I could even do that shit in the CFL. I couldn't take it anymore. The fucking game was just not the caliber of football I played at UM. So I couldn't go through that frustration anymore. So I left, went back on the road with my brothers, decided to get into the family business, music. And I couldn't watch football for like 5 fucking years. I mean, I burned every time I saw it. I had to turn. I couldn't see it. I was like disgusted.
Now your son Nico, he balled out of Tulane, and now he's on the Redskins. He had he beasted week one. He was awesome week one,
bro. Nico, amazing. First of all, didn't get drafted. Undrafted free agent. Go there at the minicamp. The Redskins, you know, we can't not sign anybody. Come next year, sign him. Hey, Dad, I'm here, but I'm not getting any work. Okay, Nico. Dad, I'm getting a lot of work. Okay, Nico. Dad, I'm... Okay, Nico. Now here comes the first game. Oh, we don't know. He's a small linebacker. Small linebacker.
No, I love when they say undersized linebacker.
What the hell?
I didn't know there was a height.
If there's an undersized player, there's got to be somebody too tall to play then.
We have too tall of a linebacker coming in. He's too jacked to fucking play linebacker.
If there's an undersized linebacker, where's the fucking oversized guy?
Yeah, he was all inside. He was fucking great in week one.
Fucking amazing. But he's been doing this his entire career at Tulane. He's the number one tackle guy that tackles for loss. That's behind the line of scrimmage.
He's always in the line of scrimmage.
The smallest guy behind the line of scrimmage.
Well, he's undersized.
Yeah, he's undersized compared to them. Shit. I was undersized, but I was knocking guys out. Like my buddy Christian Fourier, he played for Colorado. Mm-hmm. You know, we actually had a conversation on Twitter recently when he's like, Rohan, I've been looking for your ass. I wanted to knock you back out.
you know, these quote unquote undersized linebackers, dude, they're like the hybrid linebackers that every coach wants. That they want the monster linebacker like the Ray Lewis, like these guys, and then the hybrid that's going to fly all over the field. Oh,
the energizer. Ray Lewis is the perfect example. Ray's not the tallest guy either. You know, he's not the 6'2 guy. Ray's 5'11. I mean, you know, on a good day, Ray's 5'11, 5'10 and a half on a beautiful day. 5'11 actually. But he's a fucking animal. They used to say he was undersized. He's, you know, 5'10 or whatever you want to call him. I'm going to give him 5'10 because I don't want to think he's too much taller than me. You know, we compete every day. He's my roommate, actually. Best friend still today. Great human being.
Ray Lewis.
Great human being.
The way you're talking about football again, he has passion. Whatever he does, he can be writing a story. When he writes his article down, he gets passionate about everything he does.
He's out of my stable. And Ray's out of my stable. When you at Ray's out of, I brought Ray at UM, I was his guide. So I took him in. He's out of my stable. Yeah. Ray, like, we need each other, you know. Because that's that line order, brotherhood. Because in this world today, you know, people like to believe things they hear, not what they know. But because
they read a headline, that's it.
They don't fucking do. They don't read. They don't listen to the. Like, how can you tell me something about me when I'm telling you about me? But you're going to go, no. But John said you did this.
No. The headline said this. Oh, then it must be fucking true.
Yeah. But here you are talking to fucking me and you can't ask me the fucking question. Get the fuck out of here.
Now, question. We have a problem, though. With your son.
Hook me up, Jay.
Here's a problem with your son now. He has two games now. He's playing the Giants on Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve. He's going to have two horrible holidays when my Giants smack him around twice.
Well, you know what? I want to see that. I'd love that. I want his ass to get on this 53-man roster. Keep playing like he's been playing. Like, keep on fucking going at it, son. Like, you're a fucking animal and you're special.
And you know what it is, too? The Redskins have such a passionate fan base.
Am I cussing too much, bro?
No, guy, who cares? Listen, no. We'll start cursing. The fucking Red now. The Redskins have this passionate fan base. Yeah. They love plays like that. God. They love players who give their heart. They'll go 5-11, but they get so fired up for
me. Dude, I absolutely love it. And I read something, you know, way when in the early 60s when the Redskins are early 50s. You know, listen, let me tell you something. I'm truly blessed to have a son that has the opportunity to do something that I dreamed of doing. You know, my first son, you know, is like because I always think to myself, like, fuck, look at these guys. They got fathers that play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They got fucking uncles that played college ball. But fucking me, I don't have any fucking body. So no one really cares about me. It's like, it's a fluke. Mm-hmm. When you see my little lion out there, I call him the lion, Nico Marley, the lion. When I see my little lion out there, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Now they fucking know it's true.
Dude, I love I'm getting fired up right now. I might go tackle somebody.
You got me fucking started.
Yeah, maybe that bartender, the girl I can take, I'll just tackle her right now.
She got muscle.
Yeah, dude. All right. find someone else to tackle that.
Yeah.
All right, a couple of fun questions.
Sure, please.
Right now, whose name's heavier? Who's more popular, Bolt or Bob Marley in Jamaica? You got to answer it. You have to answer the question.
Well, I'll answer the question. Being that Bob is my father, and Bolt is one of my really, really good friends, and we are Jamaicans, you know, and there's only 2.2 million people. We love the fucking conversation. We love that the whole fucking world is speaking us Jamaican guys. Bob and Hussein. You know who's more popular? Bob and Hussein is more popular than everybody else in this world.
That must be passion, though, because, you know, the Kenyans are known for the marathon runners. Yeah. Dude, the sprinters.
We're known for every fucking thing.
No, the female, too. That female, the female team, too. They're unbelievable.
She is amazing. I watched the last track and field, you know. I tell you the truth. I know my people, right? And it was more like just a showcase for Hussein to go and give his thanks there. Because trust me, he cannot... There's nothing for him to prove.
No, he's the greatest.
I mean, come on, what the fuck? You want? I'm not gonna fucking train my ass off for the one fucking race just to say bye to you, motherfuckers.
Yeah, it made no sense. And
get
the
fuck out of here.
You know what I hate?
It's not happening.
The one asshole or two asshole reporters. Well, this might have tarnished his legacy.
Tarnish?
He's the greatest runner of all time. Find me someone better. The greatest runner ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Ever.
Like, tarnish? Ever. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, because he didn't win his last race? No one's going to remember that. He didn't run the Olympics when
win his last race. He did not run the last race. He wasn't in it. Bro, I know Hussein Bolt. He didn't train for this shit. All these fucking interviews and this, that, and the third. Blah, blah, blah.
When it mattered in the Olympics, he put on the showcase.
This was a fucking thank you, people, for loving me, giving me, I'm going to run one fucking last time for you to see my stallion.
That's it.
Beautiful structure on this track where you have never seen a man like me before. Kiss me goodbye.
And here's how I always like kind of rank things, okay? I watch every sport. It seems you do too. My grandmother, 93-year-old Italian lady, when Bolt was running, we got to I'm
she's
serious.
Watching.
Yeah, so when you can get to cross the cultures, when you're like, oh, my grandmother, I watched the Met game. But, oh my God, Bolt's running. She would make sure she was watching it. That's like when the whole world is watching. Believe me, that's when he fucking shines.
Because the truth of the matter of fact is that he is really, really, really special. Like it's
once
like,
in a lifetime. We'll never see anything like him. Never.
It's like Michael Jordan. It's like Pele. It's like the greatest of, like the greatest of greats. Jesse Owens.
Yeah, the Mount Rushmore of their sport.
The Mount Rushmore of their sport. I mean, legends, bro. Really, and I'm just thankful to know that, you know, he's a Jamaican guy. Mm-hmm. But we don't compare Hussein to my father because it's not the
apples and oranges.
Who does that?
Okay, now you got to be honest with this question.
I'm going to be honest.
Do you get more girls, more ass, being a Miami linebacker or a Marley son?
Most girls don't even watch football.
It's to you, believe me. Do you get.
I don't. I get more ass. No, I'm kidding. I got more asses being me. No,
let me ask this one. Who paid you better, being a Marley son or the U?
You know what? Being a Marley son, you go to the UM and you take care of the goddamn players. I'm the fucking guy that they're like, Rowan, host this guy. We want him on our team. Like, you're sure, coach? Yeah, host him. I'll host him. Keep the money. He can eat out of my plate.
Okay, so you're known to be like, you know, you're a fashion guy now. Mm-hmm. Growing up, what was the worst fashion you had? There had to be a style that, looking back now, you're like, holy fuck, what was I rocking back then?
Well, not really. Because
I'll tell you something. I got
a couple.
All right, let me hear.
So, in this is an embarrassing moment.
Okay.
When I was in Jamaica as a little boy, I had one uniform, and I never used to like denim pants. You know, my uniform was like a twill, the pant. And a comb tool at that. I know fabric, you know what I'm saying? So my pants was torn from the crotch all the way open. So I had to stitch that shit the night before because we had a sports day in school. But I had a jean pant that was perfectly fine. It was blue like my pant, but it wasn't my uniform. So I wore the fucking pant I had to stitch up while I'm in school, man. And right before the PE shit started, my fucking pants ripped. So I had to walk home, and my pants looked like a skirt. I remember hearing people say, that couldn't be Bob Marley's son.
Oh.
No. Well, yeah, but so that was
okay. How about
totally embarrassed
in the States? What's one thing you did? Like, I'll tell you, like, remember we'd have the starter jacket and you have like hold 80 on, fucking pants on them. I want another bad one.
I used to carry a fucking man purse when I was in junior high school.
Why? Why would you ever do that? That was
Jamaican style. No. Gangster. Get the fuck out of here. This is Jamaican style.
That's never cool.
Yes, it is. Jamaican style. We carry a pouch. It's called a fucking pouch. Now I'm hearing them calling this shit a purse. Get the fuck out of here. I burnt mine.
Dude, you're
this was in the ninth grade, and I used to walk with a cane just to look sporty. I'm an old school Jamaican guy, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so you know what? So
sweaters in the heat. Yeah.
So Rohan Marley, because of the man purse, so you didn't get ass in ninth grade. So 10th grade is
10th grade? No, honestly, I was fucking when I was like what, 9, 10 years old.
Well, why are you looking for a poo? Let him know the age.
But let me tell you something else. When I got to Miami
at
fucking 12, I did not get no pom-pom till like fucking I was 5 years without pom-pom. I was fucking when I was a kid in Jamaica. Not even fucking Miami. My grandma, she won't let me fucking go out. I couldn't do shit. I fucked up. I didn't get no pom-pom till I was like in the 10th grade.
And your accent wasn't crushing it down there? Anyway, because I'm a huge traveler.
No, but I can't go out. I can't do shit.
Oh, okay. So you've been meeting the girls and you couldn't do anything with it.
I couldn't do shit. I couldn't.
And you couldn't be texting them, come by my window.
Texting?
You were horrible. Oh, that's horrible.
And then I remember falling in love with this girl in the ninth grade, right? And I did everything to win her over. You know, I even went and worked a fucking day job with her father who used to remodel houses. I was painting and shit. Think I'm going to get this girl. Never got the bitch.
You went all in?
Went all in, but finally, after I left and had another girlfriend, that's when I got the pussy.
Wait, let me ask you this question. Were you ever corny with stuff? Like, what was your corniest game? Because you seem like you're kind of a smooth dude. There's all models, beautiful girls.
You know what's corny about me?
Let me hear.
Dude, let me see what's corny about me. Let's see. I'm fucking corny guy sometimes. Let's see. What's
I'm on a corny pick. I'll tell you my corny pickup line. You ready? I was like in eighth grade.
Where you from?
No. I'm like in eighth grade. I went to the movies with this one girl, and I wanted to make the move, like I wanted to make the kiss move, but I didn't know how to do it. I wasn't smooth, and I'm never fucked. This is how corny it was. I'm embarrassed to even say it. We're watching a Brady Bunch movie, right? And they kiss, and I look at her. I go, "Hey, you want to try that?" But here's the worst part, Rohan. I'll tell you how it gets even fucking worse. So now she's like, "Okay," and I'm like, "Oh, so I'm going," and she's going, and what do I say? I only go right. Like I go, dude, it was the worst fucking 4 seconds. Guy, it was so embarrassed, and I remember
we
kissed
for
like 3 seconds, and the movie still like another 40 minutes, and I just sat there, and I'm like, you know, and I'm sweating, like I feel the sweat under my arms, I'm like, God, just let this movie end. Like, it was the worst day of my fucking life, man. It was horrible.
It was the worst day of my life. So, I'm in fucking California. I'm in love with this girl in Miami, because I'm in school in Miami. I go to California.
All right.
I'm in love with this girl. She never kissed me, never nothing. But I'm like, I'm Jamaican. I had to buy this girl something, you know? At the time, silver shoes were hot. Like, you know.
All right.
Man, I fucking bought her a pair of silver shoes.
I took
that shit. I took it to her house, bro. When I came back from LA, I took it to her house. She's like, what the fuck is this?
Did you get her at least?
Nope. She never fucking even wore a shoe. I'm like, wow, I'll never do that again. Buy a girl a pair of silver shoes. You know, back in the day, like.
No, I don't know that it was ever cool. I never heard silver shoes unless you're a porn star being cool. Come on, man.
Man, I thought it was cool. Wait, I got another one, right? So when I was dating Lauren, I'm Jamaican, so. You know, you're Jamaican, man. When you go somewhere, you always bring something back for your woman, you know?
Okay.
So I'm dating Lauren. I go to the mall to buy myself something. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to buy her a shirt and some shit. She told me, don't ever buy me shit again.
Wait, what was wrong? What was wrong with it?
The style was just fucking off. Like, I don't know how to buy clothes for a woman. I'm like, what the fuck do you buy for a woman, you know? Like, I'm not a woman. I don't know shit. So I never did that again. Stop. I learned when I was in the seventh grade, and then I learned as a grown-ass man. Grown-ass kid, actually.
And you know what's great? Well, grown-ass kid, you're a grandfather now. Is that crazy or what?
Man, I remember when my son was like...
Now, I'm sorry. Is this true story? Is this Nico's?
Zion.
Okay.
True story. He's a 20-year-old.
Okay.
He thinks he's Jamaican. That's why they have babies early. So... I remember I'm in fucking Japan, and I'm getting ready to go on a plane, and his mom's hit me. Yo, the baby, Zion and this woman, they're in the baby's, she's in labor. I'm like, okay, I'm about to get on a fucking plane. What do you want me to do? She's like, yeah, you're going to be a grandfather. And I was like, don't fucking call me that. Well, let me tell you something. I was pissed off because, you know, I was fucking pissed off. Mm-hmm. But the day I arrived when he was born and when I went to the hospital, it's like everything I thought of, oh, he was too young, I saw that little baby, that beautiful boy. I was like, wow, amazing. I had to say to the mother, I said, you know, anything you need from me, I'm here. I'm here to support you guys, and I want you not to worry about anything. Just learn how to be mothers and fathers of your child right now, because that's the reality that we have to deal with. And I love him so much. Beautiful young boy. A mother's beautiful, beautiful human being. A father is just a great guy now. He's been keeping up, and I wanted to call in on his ass because he's such a fucking genius. I wanted him to say some shit on the program, but whatever.
Well, you'll come on again. We'll set it up.
Yeah, we'll set up.
You know, it's funny you said that, Rohan. I'm going to keep you for a few more minutes, man. It's funny. My brother just had a baby, Marianne, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
My first nephew. And while, you know, during the pregnancy, you know, his life's up and down. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like, he shouldn't be having a baby. Yeah, he's not ready.
Exactly.
And like, I was excited, but like the whole time, fucking my mom and I were like, oh my God.
He's not ready.
Yeah, he's not ready. How's he going to? So, dude, that's all that's going through. My mom and I.
Everybody. The entire family.
I drive. He has the baby. It was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, Thursday night, Friday morning. I drive down, and even walking in, I'm like, and then I saw the dude. I saw Tyler. I'm like, oh my God! Like, dude, that's it.
Everything washed.
Hey, we're a team now. And then you hold him. It's like,
fuck,
it's crazy.
What are you gonna do? It's like, this could be the next president.
Yes, seeing a little baby.
This is
it's
the
like,
next king.
Yes,
this could be the next
that's
greatest.
What I said, you're gonna own the world, my friend. That's what I said to him.
He could be the next greatest human being, and here you are, fucking trying to be a little dickhead. No,
yeah.
Fuck that. Let's give. It's
positivity.
Life.
You want positivity. Give it to
what
him.
What are you gonna do? You're gonna turn him down? And no. Because you know when that kid gets older, he says, "Uncle, fuck you." He's gonna remember your ass. But no, I want him to say, "Daddy, I love you. Grandpa, I love you. Uncle, I love you."
What are you gonna be called? Are you called Grandpa?
No. Don't fucking call me grandfather.
Grandpa.
I'm only 45.
Yeah.
Baba.
No. Two questions that I'm curious about.
Sure.
The name Marley, it's a heavy name in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Jamaica is, you know, it's impoverished, it's poor. Is it pressure on you and your family? Like, hey, listen.
Let me tell you the fucking problem in Jamaica, right? Those motherfuckers down there. Because you're not one of these so-called family names that blah, 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 blah. The Jamaican people, they're a little hypocrites sometimes, you know? They don't really love the Marley as they should. Not the top notches, because we come from Trenchtown and we didn't use them to build who we are. We built it ourselves.
You didn't go through the royalty path.
We didn't fucking go through the payola shit.
Mm-hmm.
We did it the right way, you know. So it's a little difficult to get things across to those motherfuckers because
they're still the high society.
Society bullshit.
Poor Marley, right? Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Oh no, we don't want them. They're the fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
I say to those guys, you know what I mean? But we will always support our people our way. We don't need a fucking anybody. We do it as my father did it then, and we're going to do it now. Our main focus is like why I started farming was to help the people directly, not fucking go through any fucking guy. I remember, let me tell you what happened to me. I bought my fucking land, right? And I want to get into this farming thing, farm license, become a farmer, help the community, right? This one fucking politician guy, I remember he was the director of agriculture or some shit, minister of agriculture. This motherfucker milked me.
Is that the one who stole shit from you?
No, he milked me. I paid his ass money because, hey, Ron, this is how he milked me. Hey, Rohan, you know, I'm the fucking head of this is my constituents, and I'm the minister of agriculture. And, you know, whatever you can do for the kids, help me out. And we always make sure that you're protecting the community and you can help. You know, I got a fund drive going on. I need $200,000, Jamaican. I need $200,000. And I would give this motherfucker money.
He took advantage of your kindness that you want. Yep.
Took advantage of my motherfucking kindness. Pardon my curse words.
Dude, you can curse as much as you want, man.
But he did. He took advantage of me. And that's why I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm trying to do something good. And here you are fucking using me like I'm some fucking dumbass. But fine. I went away and I did my shit outside of them. And doing it. We don't need anybody. But what we do need is our people of Jamaica to understand that, hey, the Marley family is for the people, not the fucking government.
Well, you know the truth. The whole... Listen, I'm not a music guy. You know what's funny shit? So I don't listen to any music, okay? No fucking music. I don't, if I heard of Bob Marshall.
I don't listen to fucking music either. No, I listen to my dad. I don't listen to shit.
So, but you know, the one thing about your dad, dude, there's not a lot of people. You're going to see a white dude, a Chinese guy, everybody get wearing the fuck. You see everybody wearing the Bob Marley shirt. He preaches that, and they take advantage of your stuff with that stuff. It's fucked up, man.
And they'd fucking do all the time. That's why we had to create the House of Marley to separate ourselves. Marley Coffee, Marley Natural, and Marley's Beverages, Melamood. And why we created that shit? To let people know who we are. No fucking different.
You're proud of it.
I'm very proud of what I've done and what my family is doing today. Because why? We didn't fucking go and bastardize anything. We built it from scratch. You don't see us plastering our father on any fucking thing. No, but we keep our... We keep our family's name. We keep our family's name and legacy alive by doing things our way and through a sustainable way. I thought I was cussing too much.
It's a bar. You're good. Yeah, sure. I'm actually three last questions. Number one, here we go. Best piece of advice that your father's ever given you that you passed on to your kids.
Listen, motherfucker. If you give any more trouble, you're not my son.
Bob Marley quote. I never saw that quote on TV.
He didn't say motherfucker, but he basically said that to me.
Okay, here's what we're going to say right now. I ask this to everyone, and you have to give me one answer. Okay? You and I are out probably next week when we go to One Oak, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
We're at One Oak. You want to impress people. Mm-hmm. No one cares.
I don't want to impress anybody. I don't want to impress anybody.
Oh, you're finishing my question.
Go ahead.
You got to take out your cell phone.
Yeah.
Who's the coolest dude in your phone? Listen to me.
Mari Stoudemire.
Damn it, that's pretty good. But you said no. If you text him, he would text you back. You gotta give me one answer.
He's the coolest. Well, listen, I got a couple of
no, no. You gotta
cool
give me
friends.
One. Give me the coolest
but
one.
Amari Stoudemire is the coolest.
And I'm a Knick fan, so that's huge for me.
Amari Stoudemire is the coolest fucking guy in my phone.
How do you know Amari?
I know him from many years ago. We met when he played for Phoenix. We met in L.A. He was cool, and then Amari is a spiritualist.
Yeah, he's always in that. Didn't he go to Tel Aviv? And
Amari won the champ. Amari left here, played one more year in Israel, won a championship. Amari studies like nobody's business. Amari knows what's going on. Amari is ancient teaching, Judea principles. Amari is a real deal.
And you want to know why everybody loves Amari in New York? Because when the Knicks, well, we still suck. But when we were nothing, he was the first guy to come. He goes, hey, give me the team. Put him on my back. I'm going to try.
Amari Stoudemire is
love him.
One of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. Trust me.
Love him.
Amari Stoudemire.
My friend, absolute pleasure. Rohan
Rastafar,
Marley.
I love.
You have fun?
And thank you because, you know what? We started out and I was telling you a story and stuff, but we got into this conversation and I started to fucking... I like that you let me be me because I'm not a fucking saint. I curse.
Well, you know what, Rohan? I didn't want to be fake, and that's what I
ain't fucking fake.
But Rohan, you know
curse,
what I want?
I talk like a real fucking man. I'm a lion order.
I'm about to join the lion order thing. So hold on. But you know what's funny? No, because I wanted to hear about the coffee thing because I was legit curious about it. And then I wanted to just talk to you about your fashion, your corniness.
I'm a corny fucking
guy. I mean,
a
grandfather.
I'm a grandfather, corny. I'm a corny grandfather, serial entrepreneur.
Rohan Marley, thank you, my friend.
Rastafari 11. Anytime you need me, let's do it together again.
My
respect.
Friend. Thank you, my friend.
Bless
it. Great time.